The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
The dead leaves of autumn that cling so desperately must fly before the cold October winds. Their simple lives have ended. Must they be born to die again? This is Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates Gordon Lightfoot's music song by song, a proud member of the FM Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and with me today is a fellow Lightfoot fan making his return to the show from Marysville, Tennessee, and a musician in his own right, Will Krueger. Will, welcome back to Carefree Highway Revisited.
Well, it's great to be back, Michael. So good to see you again.
Good to see you. The pleasure is ours. I do want to find out a little bit later about what you've been up to, because I know there's some new developments in your musical career. But for today, we're going to be looking at the song Peaceful Waters, which is at the very end of Lightfoot's debut album back in 1966. And I want to know, why did you choose this one to talk about? It's a fairly obscure song. Why do you like it so much?
Well, you know, that particular album, and I believe it was the very first album, Gordon Lightfoot album I bought, and probably because Early Morning Rain and Peter, Paul, and Mary, and, you know, how I got introduced to Gordon. But there were so many great songs, 16 Miles to Seven Lakes, Way Up Among the Pines. But I think it was the way that song started out. It actually started out as one song, and then it transformed almost into an entirely different song. And to me, that was very compelling. And the message, I think, even to this day, is very compelling.
You know, you mentioned the message, and I'm having a little bit of trouble with the message, frankly. And so that's something I know we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But I think for me, I like it because the imagery is so stark in the lyrics. I mean, there's not a word wasted. He was very economical when he wrote this song. And the message, if there is a single message, I think it's a good one. I kind of think there are two messages being sent. They're not necessarily conflicting messages, but I think there's a couple of different things going on. Do you have any anecdotal material about the song or incidents where it played a particular role in your life?
So that's a very profound question, Michael.
Well, then give me a profound answer.
That's
Will.
Smart. No. Anyway, I would say I like the way the riff was. And as I started learning that song, and I don't do it exactly like Gordon, but I do it similarly to that. I think just the time, that would have been what, 69? When did that album come out?
66.
66. Okay, well then, that was the beginning of the Vietnam War, and I think there was a lot of that messaging going on in the folk music genre at the time. And I think Gordon probably wrote it keeping that in mind. Paul Simon started writing those kinds of songs, all about the civil rights movement, all that was going on. And I think it was a timely song. But as I had mentioned before, I think it's just as valid today as it was then. It's just a really interesting melody, and I always like a good melody, and that song has all those attributes.
I hear what you're saying, and it's an apt comparison between Simon and Dylan and Lightfoot, and certainly Dylan and Lightfoot had a rapport with each other and considered each other friends. I don't know if Simon had the same relationship or the same dynamic with Lightfoot. I think for me, the best setting, and I want to hear your take on this, but the best setting for me would be probably in the autumn, when you do see these leaves dying and falling and blowing away or floating away.
And what a great comparison to life in general. I mean, that's the way he's kind of emphasizing changes that are going on, don't you think?
I do, although I have to be very honest that there's another song on that same album called Changes, and I think it does an even better job than this one does. It was written by Phil Oakes, and it's far and away his best song.
Phil, by my side, come as close as you are. I remember that.
Yeah, Phil is another one that's not with us anymore, unfortunately, but that's a beautiful one. And clearly Lightfoot appreciated the sentiment. But again, for me, stationary rather than moving. So I couldn't listen to the song while I was driving and really have the same punch to it that it would if I was standing still or sitting still. Maybe right. In my backyard, either at the very end of summer before school has started or in the first couple of weeks of school when we haven't had the fall equinox yet, but you know that summer is almost over.
Right.
That would be the soundtrack for that particular moment for me. Where and what would be the situation where that song would be the soundtrack for you?
You know, all I could say, that it was a long time ago. You're talking about when I just started playing guitar, which is actually around that same time. I started playing guitar in 1965. And of course, I wasn't that versed into those kinds of things. I was probably playing the big hit at the time was King of the Road. Okay.
And, yeah. Roger Miller. Sure.
I think later on, the song just affected me. When I would sing it to an audience, it just had a good message. It had a good feel. May peace and joy for all mankind. It starts out with the dead leaves of autumn, and then it ends up with kind of an uplifting message at the end. Don't you think?
Well, I do, but I also, when we get into the lyrics in a few minutes, I'll talk about why I think there's two different messages going on. You can help me understand the bridge between the two of them. The thing that I find mysterious about this song is that there's really not very much known about what was going on with him when he wrote this. Clearly, he's getting ready for his first album. I understand that. But this is not a song that he's writing because, well, I've got to just fill out the album, so I'll just throw this together. It was, you know, at the very tail end of the record, so it wasn't single material. He never went on record about what inspired him to write it or what was going on at the time. We can probably imagine that he was being contemplative about the changing of the seasons. Do you have an angle on what was going on in his mind or his life when he wrote this?
No idea whatsoever. No, that's probably not the answer you wanted. And I mentioned this the last time we talked. When it comes to songwriting, you don't necessarily have to have something in mind. You may have an end message that you're trying to get to, but a lot of the lyrics have to fit whatever your melody line is. And sometimes you throw out lyrics that fit. Was it Paul McCartney's Yesterday started out as Scrambled Eggs? It just has to fit in that. So I have no idea what was going on at the time, what he was thinking. He was just the preface to a really good songwriting career.
Well, not only that, but I mean, he's always had a deep appreciation for nature. And you think about Pussy Willows and Cattails and that kind of thing where he's contemplating nature. There are many other songs. That's just the one that comes to mind right now. And so this is consistent with what was going on. So I think we'll never know, but I think it's logical to assume that he's seeing the changing of the seasons from wherever he was. And yes, he's trying to fill in things based on the melody, and songwriting being a very particular form of writing where it has to be just so, if it's going to make any musical sense, then it would make sense that he had that kind of structure.
So he starts out as a, can you hear that? It's kind of a minory. It's just got a very nice, and he's got a minor. Your simple life has ended. And then it goes into a major chord. And that's what I think intrigued me about the song, how it's two different songs. And early on, it taught me how to be a little bit more expressive in my songwriting and not just stay in the box, you know. And nobody will say that Gordon Lightfoot's writing ever stayed in the box.
Oh, goodness, no. You know, we made a connection with Paul Simon and Dylan a little while ago, and there's another songwriter that had this same ability to take two songs that don't apparently seem to go together.
Right.
And that was Jim Croce. And Time in a Bottle and These Dreams, they start in this minor progression, and then it goes into the major key. It goes from D minor to D major. So you're going from one flat to two sharps, and then it goes back. And some people will say, okay, well, each one of them are two different songs, and they are, but it takes someone who really knows what he's doing to knit those two together really well. And it's appropriate that Croce wanted to be the American Lightfoot.
Interesting. That's an interesting concept. I never thought about that. But yeah, at that time, everybody was kind of imitating each other to what was popular. So Gordon was probably coming up. He's looking to be sellable. He wants to get his music out there and be marketable. So he's adopting what's going on with the changes of the times. If you don't mind, I'll go back to Paul Simon. I mean, Paul Simon's career spanned 50 years. He was doing bebop in the 50s, folk rock in the 60s. Then he changed in the 70s. In the 80s, he had Graceland. And now he's just come out. He's, what, in his 80s now? And he just came out with some new song that's entirely different type of music that he did when he was in the 60s. I know from the movie, If You Could Read My Mind, the documentary, they talked a lot about the research. When he sat down to do a song, he studied things and he researched, and he had a really good musical background that he could adapt to do the kinds of things that he did. It was genius, or as Brian Wilson says, maybe not genius, but being very clever.
Yeah, that's kind of a distinction without a difference there. But yeah, I certainly hear what you're saying about that. We'll be right back to our conversation with Will Krueger about Peaceful Waters. But first, a word from a podcast partner or two.
In 1942, when the world needed a hero to fight the forces of evil, a woman had the courage to step forward. Her name was Helen Meeker. Her adventures took her across the United States and behind the lines of both the European and Pacific fronts. President Franklin Roosevelt trusted her judgment. Adolf Hitler put a price on her head. And in the face of overwhelming odds, she battled through everything that was thrown at her, dodged death countless times, and challenged the most diabolical figures in history. The star of more than 20 novels, Helen Meeker proved her grit and determination time and time again. And now the Long Highway Players bring the book series to life on the airways. These exciting dramas will place you in the middle of the action, immerse you in riveting drama, plunge you into unimagined intrigue, and confound you with dark mysteries, while giving you the opportunity to live adventures in a time when the fate of the world hung in the balance. Enjoy the exploits of Helen Meeker and follow author Ace Collins's In the President's Service series on That's Not Canon Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Audie Martello, the host of the Mostly Folk Podcast, a 60-minute foray into the music we all love. You will hear newly released albums, classic folk, country, and bluegrass music, as well as some traditional music that may or may not be true to the genre. Sometimes irreverent, often opinionated, but always entertaining. You may even hear a radio magic trick every so often, as well as numerous interviews via Zoom and telephone with established as well as indie artists. Mostly Folk is available wherever you listen to podcasts, and always at mostlyfolk.org.
Well, let's get into the lyrics now a little bit. The dead leaves of autumn that cling so desperately, and this is right out of Robert Frost. I mean, I have this image of the leaves with the dead or the dying stems. They're being blown by the wind. Maybe they're still hanging on, but you know it's only a matter of time before they fall off the tree or they're blown off the tree. And there's a phrase in some of the original Robin Hood stories, so passed the seasons then, so they pass now, and so they will pass in time to come, while we come and go like leaves of a tree that fall and are soon forgotten.
Wow.
And so that was what was kind of stirred up with me when I did that. must fly before the cold October winds. Their simple lives have ended. Must they be born to die again? And this is part of the cycles of nature. You and I have lived through enough of this to know that fall is always going to follow summer and winter will always follow fall, et cetera, et cetera. But the tone is almost unnecessarily sad right here.
Interesting. You know, I got to add, Michael, I enjoy unpacking these songs, and that's one of the reasons I enjoy your podcast, because you do kind of really get into the lyrics. And even though I've sung this probably, you know, 100 times, I'm going to sing it next time with a little bit more understanding of what I'm singing about. So I appreciate that. If you think about those, it's five lines. And in those five lines, he says so much about life and death in there. And then now it comes around, it's just one verse, and now it comes around to the chorus. And in the chorus, it's uplifting. Oh, may the light of freedom shine for all the world to see.
Yes, and I'm almost there, because that where he shifts ideas is where I kind of lose my way with this song. But leaves are leaves. They don't have more than one life. And I don't think Gordon's making a deep ecological statement here.
No,
I mean, obviously, he's a nature lover, but he's not saying something, well, respect Mother Earth. It's much more spiritual than that. But then he does go to, oh, may the light of freedom shine for all the world to see, and peace and joy to all mankind through all the years to be. Beautiful statement.
Yes.
What does it have to do with leaves? I mean, that's the thing that I don't get about this. If it's a statement about how short life is and that we need to find a place of peace and freedom during those short lives, that's fine. What does it have to do with dying leaves? That's where I got lost, and that's where I need your help.
Oh, gosh, there's a technique in songwriting where you do opposites. And maybe that's what he's leading that off into these minor chords, and he's saying things are pretty rough. Things are not in a good state. He might have been talking about the Vietnam War or whatever was going on in his personal life too, which you can't discount. And then he brings in this hope. He changes to a major chord, and all of a sudden it's like the sun is up. It's a brand new day. Oh, may the light of freedom shine for all the world to see, and peace and joy for all mankind through all the years to be. And then he goes back to that. For soon the leaves will die and the long hard wind will blow. May this world find a resting place where peaceful waters flow. Poetically, it's just beautiful. And then, of course, the way that chorus goes on, that particular melody that he found, it just works so well. To me, that gives an uplifting message, I think. And that is one of the reasons that felt compelling to me. And a lot of times I would have this song as the last song in my concerts. I would end with something like this because it was uplifting.
I think I know what you mean. And it certainly doesn't end sadly. It ends on a lyrical uplift and sort of a musical uplift. It's still to me, and I haven't been an active songwriter for many years. And so for me, he might as well have started singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. You know, that it's these two things. They're both worth contemplating. They're both fine images, but I don't see the bridge between them. And so that's the problem I have as a non-songwriter with this. Maybe I'm trying to read it too much like an essay, because that's
Michael,
what I get paid for.
What you're saying is when you hear this song, it kind of gives you mixed feelings. I hear that song and I feel good afterwards. In other words, it's a good lifting song, but you're saying to me that you're a little mixed on. You're not quite sure how to feel about the song. That's interesting.
Yeah. I love the fact that he's talking about the idea that we all should be in a place where peaceful waters flow. But then I think back, wait a minute, you were being pretty maudlin there a minute ago, and now you're trying to make up for it.
As my father would once say, you're thinking about it too much.
I think I probably am. If I had one wish, I would wish that I didn't think about things too much.
Gordon goes, I'm going to write this song, and some people are going to get it, and some people are going to go, what was that all about? You know, so maybe it was his sense of humor, Michael.
It could have been. I mean, I never saw him play this. And as we'll see in a second or two, nobody ever saw him play it because he never played it in concert.
And that's interesting. You had mentioned in your brief about Ed Ames recording the song, and I had never heard anybody else do that song. So I looked it up, I found the song, and it's like, I don't know who wrote, but Ed Ames starts out with a whole entirely different lyric because it's a relatively short song.
Yeah.
And I don't believe Gordon wrote those. If you listen to Ed Ames' version, there's a whole different lyric that he starts out with that fits in. It actually makes the song more complete. What's your feeling on Ed Ames' version?
I listened to it and I thought, okay, it's certainly well arranged, but it still left me with the same schism of these are two songs and they're, I almost felt like, okay, the first one's unfinished and the second one wasn't started. but then, you know, that's me being too cerebral about it. What I can tell you is that it does leave me feeling both some hope and some melancholy. And maybe that is a statement that he's able to inspire both of those in me. I like this song for the same reason I like Sister Fatima by Don McLean.
Oh,
is
okay.
That he's using some very cool jazzy chords. And I have no idea what the song is about. I mean, a fortune teller. And then I came from nowhere like you and your friend. And I'm thinking, is this a love song? Or are you talking about this guru kind of person?
Right.
So
right.
I would listen to Peaceful Waters in the same playlist. This is going to be an interesting amalgam of different emotions and different musical elements.
I wonder why he never played it in concert, or there was no record of him playing that in concert.
I was going to ask you the same question, because you really don't need a whole lot of other accompaniment. I mean, I realize that Bruce Langhorne played guitar on this.
Right.
Apparently Red Shea either was not on the scene, or I think he was actually just wasn't on the scene because he hadn't started playing with Gordon yet. Bill Lee played bass, but I don't even know if there was a bass in this song.
And Bill Lee did Peter, Paul, and Mary. Abel Grossman was his manager as well, was it, or not?
For a while, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That might be why the Bill Lee, you know, thing, because Bill Lee played a lot of the early stuff for Peter, Paul, and Mary.
I guess what I'm saying, though, is that you don't need a whole lot of other accompaniment, which to me begs the question, well, if you didn't need all these other elements, this is not like Don Quixote with the strings and all that.
Yeah,
you know, why the heck didn't you just play the song? And who knows? No, never played it in concert.
But I will tell you this, Michael, every time I play it from this day on, I'm going to be thinking about what you're thinking about it.
Oh, I hope I haven't ruined it for you, Will. If you're still getting peace from it, and if you're still using it as a closing to your sets, God love you.
I might not now.
Oh, man. Okay, well, all of you fans out there of Will's music, I apologize. We'll be right back to our conversation with Will Krueger about Peaceful Waters. But first, a word from a podcast partner or two. The American West is a place of lore and legend, of triumphs and tragedies. No one can tell the true stories of the West better than author Rick Steber. And now there's a podcast showcasing his work. It's called Writing the West, and every episode will feature his short stories and his poetry. If you want to know the true stories of cowboys, pioneers, miners, and Native Americans, this 15-minute podcast is for you. Writing the West is available on Spotify, Audible, Podbean, or wherever you get your listening matter. That's Writing the West, the work of Rick Steber.
Radio is so much different than it was in the 80s. We had it all. The music, the movies, the DJs, and morning shows. Back to the 80s Radio is a show from the 80s in podcast form. We bring the memories from that awesome decade back. Join Toscano and Chang every Friday as they take you on a ride back in time, sharing their experiences and laughs. Stop on by and discover some of the wacky things this crazy duo comes up with. They talk about it all, the good, the bad, and the ugly of the greatest decade. Don't miss the greatest 80s podcast in the world. Back to the 80s radio.
The song was on Lightfoot. It was his first original album. He recorded this in 1964, and then I imagine did some work on it in 65, and then it was released in 66. This was the 14th song on the record. That in itself was unusual, because you usually had songs that maybe had 10, maybe 12 songs, but to have 14.
Yeah. 12 was the norm back, you know, six on each side of the album, right?
Yeah. So to have 14 songs, if I were a producer, like if I were producing you, I'd say, give me your best 10 rather than try 14, because we're now 60 years removed from the making of this album. And I think people's attention spans have gotten that much worse.
In your research or any books out about Lightfoot, I'm just thinking about, look, what come to mind is Old Linda, which is on that album. And all it is a bass and Gordon singing the song on Lightfoot. And it's a different type of song than any of the other ones he did. And I'd be interested, and when he got his record contract and they went through the songs that they were going to do. And I suppose at that time, Albert Grossman had some input into it. But it's interesting, the contrast between some of the songs that were on there.
You know, I haven't looked for the studio notes or anything like that of the different albums. Although what I'm hoping to do towards the end of this series, that I will be, you know, looking at albums as a whole rather than just songs. So I'm going to go through all the songs and then we'll look at the albums, my guests and I. But no, I haven't looked, but that doesn't mean they don't exist. The oral history part of it probably be a little bit more difficult, because I'm pretty sure that everybody who was involved with this album has since passed on. But you never know. I think my favorite musical aspect of this song is the syncopation that's going on, because you hear a couple of different rhythms happening between what Lightfoot is doing and what the second guitar, what Bruce Langhorne, who was a brilliant studio musician, yes, was doing in this. I think that was my favorite part of this, even more than the chording, which is way out of the ordinary, but is also beautiful. Yeah. So what to you is your favorite musical aspect of it?
Well, like I said, and I kind of did that earlier, he starts out with this nice little riff, and then he goes in from those minors to the major chord. Again, it's just like a whole uplifting thing. That's the first verse is kind of dreary, but now there's a brand new start, and he's evoking a lot of the lyrical things that people were doing about peace and love. And again, this is early. This is, what, 2 years after the Kennedy assassination. The country was kind of coming out of some things. And, you know, I'm 73, so I kind of remember that quite a bit as a teenager of those days. And that was just the part of the culture that folk music, and I'm sorry, folk music didn't take off like country music, but folk music was right for its time.
Yeah, and it is consistent with the zeitgeist of the 1960s. And he wrote this at a time before we got into sort of the hippie stuff, which became cliched and had its own strengths and its own weaknesses. But this is really him being contemplative in almost a monastic way. And he did it beautifully. He just didn't do it in what some people would consider to be a traditionally organized song, and doesn't make it better or worse, just makes it different. Going back to the covers for just a second, is there anybody that you wish would or had covered this song?
Oh gosh, I don't know. Other than at the time, Peter, Paul, and Mary could have probably done a good job, but my first instinct is to say that nobody could do a Gordon Lightfoot song better than Gordon Lightfoot. Except maybe for Early Morning Rain, which, what a difference between Gordon's version of Early Morning Rain and what Peter, Paul, and Mary did. Same thing with John Denver's Leave It on a Jet Plane. You know, the way Noel, Paul Stuckey, and Peter Yarrow would take these arrangements and make them fit there. So it might be interesting to hear what they did. I certainly thought the Ed Ames thing was way overproduced, but that was such as the times, I guess.
The thing about early morning rain is that I've heard so many different versions of it. And although I have to agree that there are a lot that are close seconds, I still side with Judy Collins, who says that Gordon can still sing that song better than anybody can.
Yeah.
And because he wrote it, of course. But,
yeah.
You know, because it comes from his heart in a way that it can't come from anybody else's heart. I would love to hear either Ed Sheeran try this or, again, Don McLean. If he sang other people's stuff. Now, Don McLean has really been out of the folk.
Yeah, but I could hear him doing this song and probably doing justice to it. That's a good choice there. I could hear that.
And he is much more in the country field these days, if he's still performing at all. And he hasn't really returned to folk music in a very long time. But if he still has the pipes, you know, I would still like to hear him try this. But Ed Sheeran, I think, would be also a great one. So, Will, we did a quick run through on what is a very short song. I think it's only about 2 minutes and 40 seconds. So let's break away from that from just a second now. So tell us what you've been up to musically and what new projects you're working on.
Well, I've been collaborating with a couple of my good friends. One gentleman from Vienna, Austria, Wolfgang Adolf is his name. And it's all in this John Denver family that I belong to, because John's music is so liked worldwide. I've gotten to meet these other people, and then we'll work, you know, in different recording studios, and we combine our stuff together. So I'm doing that, and that's always fun to produce stuff. I'm focusing on assisted living places to play now too. Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting aspect. I was playing at this assisted living facility out in Bristol, Virginia, which is right on the border. It's about 2 hours from here. But I would play for the memory care unit, and then I would play for the assisted living care unit. Well, the memory care unit, they're pretty fairly gone, to put it nicely. And when the first time I played there, I was doing my set, and of course, nobody's responding. And you kind of wonder, what am I doing wrong or whatever? And then I went over to the assisted living, and they're a little bit more with it, you know, my age, a little older, and they were getting everything. And I thought about it, and I thought, the next time I do the memory care, I'm going to do the really older songs. I'm going to do like Puff the Magic Dragon, King of the Road. And Michael, you would not believe the response those people get, even though they're fairly out of it. That memory of that music, of their heyday, is still there. And it was quite a rewarding for me to feel like I was contributing to that. So I'm pursuing that a little bit more. I'm doing some places around here in Pigeon Forge and in the Townsend area around me, and of course in Merrillville. And then I'm doing my John Denver tribute show again up in Fish Creek, Wisconsin, July 7th. And they've had me back there now 7 years in a row. And I do just the one-man show, but I find the audience really appreciative. But then I also have kind of parlayed that into what I call the folk legend show. So I include not only John Denver, but I also include Gordon, Paul Simon, and James Taylor, all of those guys, the good music. And I would always start out my show, I would always say, you know, every generation thinks their music is the best, but ours actually was. You know, and that's the way I feel, because that was a great, great time for songwriters. And then more recently, I was in a Peter, Paul, and Mary tribute group called Peter, Paul, and Mary Alive for a number of years. And I left them for about 7 years, and I got a call to come back in to do a few more dates with them. If you're really a Peter, Paul, and Mary fan, you'll appreciate what we try to do with their music. We really try to accurately reproduce what Noel, Peter, and Mary did with their music. And if you go to peterpaulandmaryalive.com and Peter, Paul, and Mary Alive on YouTube, you'll see some of the videos of the stuff that we do. And that's exciting. We've got a show August 17th in Burnham, Texas. And then the following day, August 18th, we're playing outside of Houston, Texas, for a couple of shows.
You've been a busy boy then. That's fantastic. grew up with PPM, listened to their music as a college student, and since then, and then really wish I could have an hour to sit down and talk with Paul Stukey, because he's seems like such a genuine guy in so many ways. Will Krueger, thank you so much. It's always a joy to sit and talk music with you. And I hope the rest of the year continues to be good to you. And please keep the music coming.
Thank you, Michael. And right back at you, sir.
And thanks for listening, everybody. If you like this well enough to listen to the whole thing, tell somebody about it. Carefree Highway Revisited is on Apple, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your listening matter. Our website is www.lightfootpodcast.com. I'd like to make a special request for you to visit my Patreon page. I love this show so much, and I want to keep it going, and you're in a position to help. Please head over to www.patreon.com/carefreehighwayrevisited. A dollar or two a month is all I ask. You can reach me, Mike Messner, at teachermike72@gmail.com. Well, our next episode will feature my guest, Deb Radwan from Southern California. She's making, I think, her seventh appearance on the show. And she and I will be discussing Minstrel of the Dawn from the Sit Down Young Stranger album. That episode will be coming out in early May of 2024. Until then, for Will Krueger, this is Mike Messner reminding you, run for the roses, but don't forget to stop and smell them. We'll see you next time.